other work, the one and other responsibilities and privileges that Christians have in as brothers and sisters in the family of God. And the way we've been describing this is this is the verb form of fellowship. This is not the noun. Fellowship is what we have. These one and others are descriptions of how we engage in fellowship. So that kind of gives you an idea. And tonight, I mentioned to you to start with that there are more of these. We have, this is 15 of these. There are more of them. Some of them are stated in the negative form. We haven't really pursued those as much. The ones we have not covered do fit within the umbrella of several of these others that we have considered. I view the one we'll think about tonight as sort of having come full circle. We started with the fact that we are members of one another, and then the different ways we kind of started in Romans 12 and came through taking them as we came to them, and those different tasks have, of course, things in common, but they also have sort of some specific things with each one of them. So you kind of notice that as we've gone along. And I really appreciate the privilege of thinking about this with you, and thank you for your comments about this series, and thank you for so many of you for having been here with us for all of them or almost all of them. We have some friends with us tonight. Welcome. We have some Clark Ridge folks here. So we have our honored guest, our beloved guest, and our very highest guest. And that's where you guys are there. Okay. You can ask Barney if you don't believe me about that. Tonight, I asked you last week, all right, if you were me, and you know that you're dealing with a term that comes up 50-some times in the New Testament, and you're going to conclude the series, you have one more of these to do, which one would you choose? Did you go home and look it up and think it all over? I'm sure you did. You took you took your phone and you just looked up in the concordance of words that you have there, and none of you even thought about it, did you, anymore? Okay, just left it to me. Well, here's the one I've chosen. And you think about it, you'll see that I've made a good choice here. It's next in our list. Consider one another. It's a simple thing. From Hebrews 10 and verse 24, I'll show you in a second the different ways that this can be kind of taken. You'll notice the accent put in different places on it. But really, you can see, can't you, that this would naturally result from our being members of each other. Anything you do with yourself, you're going to consider how it will be for this side if you do something to this side. So that makes sense. And then if you think about it further, you can see that this would be necessary in order to do any of the other things that we have studied. You can't do a single one of them without involving yourself in this. Larry used marriage for the illustration of our thinking about our involvement with each other in a congregational sense. This would be an essential part of family. When you say I do, then you forego the right to ever do anything ever again without considering the impact it will have on the others in your family. And that's not a burden. It's a high privilege. And that's kind of the way this is to be thought of here. I think we need to start with the first word on that, the consider part of this. It is, I learned in working on this that this is the original term is a form of, it's formed by two, the combination of two words, which would be an intensive form of down, and then to ponder, to think upon, to consider. So if you were doing it now, and if you want to use an illustration, it would be, this would be to download. That would really be to download one another, to consider one another, to think about one another. And if you look up the definitions in various New Testament word dictionaries, you'll find this one in most of them, to direct one's whole mind to an object. What would the object be here? To direct one's whole mind. If we're to consider one another, then what's the object of it? Each other. That would be part of it. Then the ones underlined or the blanks in your paper you have there, to perceive clearly or to understand fully or to consider closely is the meaning of this term. And I think I've settled on an illustration of how you, the nature of this kind of considering, you see. It's not, you know, you could think of it, if you misapply this, we could make stalkers of ourselves, or we could make fault finders of ourselves with each other, or we could make enemies of each other by dwelling on each other all the time. This is, however, to think on one another in order to understand fully what each other is going through, what it's like for each other, what the situation is, and so forth with each other. And here's an example. In Luke 12 and verse 24, you guys will be familiar with this. You consider the ravens. Luke has it here. They don't sow or reap. I'm paraphrasing a bit. They don't have storehouses or barns, and yet God feeds them. Now, if I wanted to find out what it means to consider something, what would I learn from this situation here? Is the Lord just wanting me to be a bird watcher? All right? To do what? Patience, all right? That would be part of it. Not to be anxious. It goes ahead to say, of how much more value are you than the birds? I'm to look at them and to see that they're small creatures. They don't have jobs. They don't run an economy. They don't bear responsibility, but God feeds them. And to consider would mean then to draw a conclusion from that. What conclusion am I to draw? If God takes care of the birds, and if I'm of more value to Him than they are by virtue of having been made in His image, then the conclusion is, all right, He can fully take care of me as well. All right, the next illustration, verse 27, consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Now, what conclusion? To consider would mean to see that, to think on it, to meditate on it, to understand it, and to draw what conclusion from it? Same main idea, but all right, to clothe us in this case. It would be The Lord goes ahead to say, if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? So what I'm getting at here is you notice in these two cases that to consider means not just to notice, not just to observe, not just to see, and also then not simply to think on it, but then to draw an appropriate conclusion from what we have thought about. Now, that brings us to our verse a little farther here. To consider what, though? To consider one another, but what? In what way? And we think about this. So I notice in comparing the different efforts at translating Hebrews 10 and verse 24, the emphasis can be put on one of two places. First, is it more that we're consider one another? For example, the American Standard Version translates the verse, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. In the King James, the New King James, Hugo McCord, Brother McCord's translation, all take that general approach. The what we consider here is one another to provoke to love and good works. So that's one possibility. Or is it more that we consider how to? Is this a, are we thinking about, oh my, I got to figure out how can I do this? How can I fulfill my task here? So here is the English Standard Version, New American Standard, NIV, New Revised Standard, take this approach, and let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds. Now, you can look at that and you can think, well, there's not a great amount of difference between those two. To do the first one, you're going to have to engage in some variety of the second one. However, it could leave a bit different impression about what you're really thinking about. The first one would communicate to us that you have to consider the other person. And you have to think about the other person. And you have to realize where that other person is doing all he or she can, or where he or she is burdened, or where that other person is kind of gradually losing interest and closing up like a flower, kind of closing up, and where that person is drawn away, or where the person is drifting in the wrong direction even. That would be the... So I looked up the literal word order, and here's my suggestion to us. It's more one another, but it's considering one another for a positive purpose. And that's what I'd like you to notice there. Here's the literal word order. This is from just the interlinear type translation. Let us consider one another to incitement of love and of good works. All right, I want you to think about that for a second. And this would mean an intentional act which involves paying attention to the facial language, the body language, the life circumstance, the words, the concerns of what I know of another my brother or sister's life, for the purpose of helping to promote love and good in our family life. So this is an intentional action where one decides to pay attention to brothers and sisters with the intention of being a cause for the development of greater love and good in each other's actions, of promoting that, of having that kind of impact on one another. So and this would be an intentional type action. All right, down to here, any comment or question, observation you have about the consider part of this? Luis?
My Spanish Bible uses it for encouragement to each other.
All right, encouragement to each other. That would be a form of it. It is, however, a different original word. I looked it up, and in this case, the consider of verse 24 is a different term from the encouraging or exhorting of verse 25, although they are obviously related to each other. Yeah. So it is the intention to have an encouraging effect on the other person. A little different action than just encouraging. All right, you do need patience. You also need goodwill. You also need the recognition that the Lord wants us to love each other and to do good, and that sometimes we wear out at that unless we have a renewing effect in some way in each other's life. So you can see that. Anybody else? Dennis?
We need to consider the value and the power of the Golden Rule.
All right. We found that with a bunch of these, haven't we? To consider the value and the power of the Golden Rule. And these are different forms of application of that rule, I suppose we could say. Anyone else? Gail? All right. All right, that would be, Gail is saying that this would involve thinking through how this would, how the other person would feel about this, how this would impact the other person, how the other person might feel. And that ranges, that kind of consideration or thoughtfulness goes for everything from what we say in a Bible class to how we plan activities or so forth that go on. David? That's a good illustration. How many of you in here know Eddie Clower? David is mentioning. Several of you do. David, he walked in my office when I was still with the congregation in Green Forest, and Eddie was a Bible professor and well known and all that. But he could walk in to my office when I'm in my 20s and make me feel just as important as him. And that's what you're talking about, isn't it? Yeah. And it's not surprising he was good at evangelism, I think, because of that. Anybody else? Okay. That's happened to me many a time, Bill. It falls under the heading of loving each other, I suppose, in a real way. Love does beget love. Patience? Okay. Patience, brotherly patience. That would be part of this. All right, now, move ahead with me. I want to suggest to us that this conclusion here that we've reached is a kind of considering that fits with the line of thought in the epistle to the Hebrews. The letter of the Hebrews is one of almost all of our favorite books in the Bible because it includes so much of the Bible, because it's so practical and it is intended to encourage in the ways the writer knows we'll all need it. This fits with the two uses of consider in this letter. There are two uses. I believe both of them apply to persons. In chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. It has, therefore, holy brethren, you who share in a heavenly calling, consider Jesus, the apostle and high priest of our confession, who was faithful to him who appointed him, just as Moses also was faithful in all the house of God. All right, to consider Jesus is to realize his faithfulness and draw from that what conclusion? We holy brothers, consider Jesus, recognize his faithfulness to the God who appointed him, and draw what conclusion about us? We ought to be faithful. We ought to be like him. That's right. We ought to be faithful. If he's the one we confess, if he's the apostle and high priest of our confession, then if he's faithful, we should be. So that's one of them. Secondly, look at this verse in Hebrews 10:24 again. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. Or the English Standard Version has it, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. So if you notice, this happens following at the end of verse 23, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Do you notice the inversion of the order in chapter 3? Consider him who was faithful. And here, he is faithful who promised, so let us consider one another. I think that's an interesting way. So this fits with the other uses, the other use of consider in this letter is what I'm getting at. It also fits with the need of the readers of this letter. We could spend the whole class period on this part of it. I don't want to take the time to do all that, but I've chosen two passages to show you what I'm getting at here. Chapter 3, verses 12 and 13 is the basic statement of concern in this letter. Take care, brothers, lest there be in any, and I want you to see the terms, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God. All right, how do we do that? But exhort one another every day, as long as it's called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Notice the personal words here. In any of you, and then one another, and that none of you, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief, exhort one another every day that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. The personal terms, in any of you, one another, and then none of you. And then over in chapter 6 at verses 9 through 12, there's another example of this, and maybe the best illustration of what he actually means by considering one another to provoke to love and good works. If I had to choose an example in this letter where the writer actually does exactly what he says in chapter 10:24, it'd be this paragraph. I'd like you to watch how he does. Though we speak in this way, he's just warned about the ground that doesn't bear any fruit and it gets burned off. So though we speak in this way, yet in your case, beloved, we feel sure of better things. So we speak and we feel sure of better things in your case, things that belong to salvation. For God is not So God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love you have shown for his name in serving the saints, as you still do. Now notice what he's done. He wants them to do better. He feels sure they will. But he assures them first that God knows about and values the good work they've already done and are still doing. And he wants them to know that he recognizes and values that too. That's a crucial part of considering one another in order to provoke to love and good works. Verse 11. And we desire each one of you to show the same earnestness, to have the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. What the patience Bill just said we needed right there. So if you look at this, verse 10 mentions their love, the love that they've shown. Verse 11 mentions the full assurance of hope. And verse 12 mentions the faith that inherits the promises. And then you can read that, and what would you think these people are needing when you read that paragraph? What do you think these Christians are needing just from that paragraph? Can we read the whole thing again? Or can you think about that and see? Well, the illustration he just used before talked about the ground that wasn't bringing forth any fruit and wasn't responding to being blessed by God and was ready to be burned off. Then, in it, he talks about better things. He mentions their past work and love. Then he mentions having the full assurance of hope to the end. Then he mentions not being sluggish. What do you think they needed? They needed encouragement. What, Dave? And the pep talk. Exactly. Why would you need a pep talk? To get charged up again. So what if I said you're tired, you've grown weary, you are in danger of being sluggish? That would be it. And how does he respond? He gives credit, he gives some relief, he gives some reassurance to them in order to motivate them and to help them and to stir them up to love and good works. And then this fits with the tone of the exhortation here in Hebrews 10. Go back to Hebrews 10 now. Hebrews 10 and verses 19 through 25 is the summation of the main argument of the book of Hebrews. And if you just stand back and look at it, you'll notice that there are two since we haves. Verse 19, since we have confidence to enter the holy place by the blood of Jesus. And verse 21, since we have a great high priest over the house of God. And then there are three let us's. A let us is very different from a you better. If you think about it, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. That's verse 22. Second, let us, verse 23, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Third, let us, verse 24, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, or consider one another provoked to love and good works. And so the tone of this means that the considering that we're doing is intended to be aware of each other in a manner which will help us be encouraged in order to participate in continuing love and good works. That would be the way to summarize it. Now, look a little closer at verses 24 and 25. Let us consider how this is, or to consider one another to provoke to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. That's been the text, I suppose, for many a sermon or a lesson on attendance. It's really about considering each other. And the meeting together is important because considering each other is important. Look at the ideas that I've included on your on our study guide here. The draw near and hold fast and do good, which is verses 22, 23, and 24, is to be done, but not by attending only to your own personal salvation and fulfillment. This is a Larry talked about a form of this idea here, maybe without intending to, I don't know, but this is a yes, it's important to draw near to God with a true heart, and yes, it's important to hold fast the confession of your hope, but not just for your own personal benefit. Also because it's going to have some effect on somebody else and somebody else's faith. So this would cause us to stop and think that without the together part of this, faith, hope, and love fade, and we lose motivation to maintain our discipleship. I wonder if that's even debatable. I've heard it argued and so forth, but really, really dwell on and think about what that number two there says. Can you keep your intention to follow Jesus fervent, warm, life-consuming, off to yourself? I think the Hebrew writer thinks not, and most of us know that. Here, notice in verse 25, where it's, how's it translated? Not forsaking, not neglecting, this version here says. It's actually the exact same term that's used over in chapter 13. Verse 5, at the end of the verse, for he has said, I will never leave you, nor what? Forsake you. So, what the Hebrew writer is saying in 10:25 is, don't do to your brothers and sisters what God has promised not to do to you. Don't forsake them. And I realize that in terms of preaching to a crowd, this is not the right crowd. I don't mean to be preaching. I want for us to understand what the purpose of this is. Verse 25, here's Moffat's paraphrase of this. Moffat, an older paraphrase, verse 25. Do not leave your fellow members in the lurch. I wonder what the lurch is. I don't think I can define it, but I think I've felt it before. Do not leave your fellow members in the lurch. And that kind of helps to see maybe the what the point of the considering one another deals. Let me ask you this straight up here. I know that coming to church or coming to class and so forth, I know that so many other things compete for that time. The energy, the attention, the activities, the family things, just the busyness, what you have to do in the morning, how late you'll get home at night, and all of that. Have you ever just come only because you thought of how it might impact everybody else? Is that wrong? Is that a good reason? Yep. Let me just ask you the honest truth. How many of you, when you come to church, look around to see if your brothers and sisters are there, and whether they are or not has an impact on you? If you're thinking every hand in here would go up on that, it does. And that's all right. That's how the Lord meant for us to be. He just wants us to know we have that effect on each other. And it's all right to... This is congregational life here enters this. It is not just go to church somewhere. Whichever way is easiest for you, the better. What it's saying is your brothers and sisters need to see you. And their survival may depend on whether or not they do. Luis.
I think sometimes we overlook our attitudes when we come to church. And sometimes we carry this bag and we don't realize that this bag that we have is noticeable for other people.
Yeah.
It can be from nothing high or even small.
Yeah. I think Luis is saying that sometimes we don't consider how much our attitudes when we come to church. I would say that's exactly what we've been talking about the whole quarter, though, that part of it. Patience, okay. Are you trying to tell me you're being patient with me, Bill? I'm kind of getting that message from you. Yeah, go ahead. Yes. All right, the lurch is to leave somebody in his most difficult time. Thank you. That's probably well said. All right. All right, I got like 6 minutes here to do the what was a very important part of this lesson. And this is my own wording, so I hope you'll take it that way. To consider one another to provoke. How does the word provoke generally strike you? If I say... I hope that's the effect here, but is that generally how... If I say Gene provoked me... Now, he didn't, but if Gene provoked me... It has a negative connotation, meaning what? All right. It would be like saying, he irritated me, or he aggravated... This is the word when Paul was in Athens at Mars Hill, and he looked and he saw all of the idols that were there and so forth. They provoked his spirit. But here it's used in a positive sense. It's to stimulate or to stir up or to spur on to do love and to engage in good deeds. All right, you guys are going to have to do this with me quickly. What I've done here is to try to go back to Hebrews 2 and from there onward to summarize the message here as if these were ways to stimulate to love and good works. Here are things I need to do in consideration of you in order for this to happen. Number one, I would need to attach an ever-increasing value on what we have already heard. You cannot stimulate in the way the Hebrew writer means simply by trying to think of something new. You have to see deeper and deeper into what you've already heard and to appreciate it more and more. And I suggest to you that all of Hebrews chapter 2 and all of Hebrews chapter 12 relate to this here in one way or another. Secondly, engage in a daily ministry of heart softening. Your own and others. What do you do on a daily basis to keep your heart soft and responsive? Maybe you watch the Hallmark movies. Or what do you do? You need to... There are lots of things in this world which will callous your heart and make you cynical and cause you to be not easily impressed. The deceitfulness of sin can do that to our hearts. Where we no longer can be embarrassed, we no longer can rejoice, and so some way, I think counting your blessings in prayer is a way to do that. Reading the Lord's Word and meditating on it's a way to do that. Realizing what other people have done to bless your life is a way to do that. There are many ways. Third, this is a big part of this letter, these three R words right here. If you want to show consideration for brothers and sisters in a way that stimulates them to goodness and not in a way that gives them an inferiority complex and make them feel like miserable failures, do it this way. Give recognition for what has already been endured or what struggles have already been overcome or what kind of compassion has already been shown. Look at right after this in Hebrews 10. If you go down to verse 32 and start, you'll see this kind of thing happening. Then give relief from what is being borne. When you know that somebody's been under the gun and under the fire of responsibility, then help carry the load. Give relief from it in some way or another. And third, offer reassurance about the future, about what's still possible. And again, I think this happens in chapter 6. I think it happens really twice in chapter 6. I think it happens at the end of the relief part, at the end of chapter 4, the reassurance, all of chapter 11. About faith is about this. Fourth, be an active presence of full of assurance faith and of without wavering hope and love and good works. I want to say again something I said earlier. In my opinion, there has never been a word of real encouragement which has started with the recounting of how bad things are. And there may be admonition that happens that way. I'm not saying it's never needed, but encouragement has these characteristics. And then fourth, always turn attention back to Jesus and His once for all perfect, sufficient work for all of us. Those five things will help us in stimulating love and good works. Well, 15 weeks of one another's, and now we'll do something another else. We're working on that, and I know that John, and you've been going through maybe the suggestions of our folks for the next year. We'll try to bear that in mind. We'll have we're going to do something else. Maybe not exactly in the auditorium all together next week. Something that I hope you'll come if you're in town, and we'll make it something that will be rememberable, if that's a word. And and then we'll begin our new series after the first of the year. I really appreciate you giving me the privilege of studying along with you these Wednesday nights.